Welcome to Hacking Your ADHD, part of the ADHD Rewired Podcast Network. I'm your host, William Kerb, and I have ADHD. On this podcast, I dig into the tools, tactics, and best practices to help you work with your ADHD brain. Hey team, this week I'm talking to Dawn Barclay about her book, Traveling Different: Vacation Strategies for Parents of the Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse. Regardless of whether or not you have kids, traveling can be difficult when you have an invisible disability such as ADHD or ASD. There are so many things that we have to keep track of, and even when we get there, there are still a host of things that our ADHD can make even more difficult. Dawn has spent her career working in the travel industry as well as working as a travel writer. She wrote this book as a guide to what she wished she had 20 years ago. In our conversation today, we talk about some of the many difficulties that come from traveling with neurodiverse children, and of course ourselves, and then also what we can do to work on alleviating some of those stressors. If you'd like to follow along on the show notes page, you can find that at hackingyouradhd.com/137. All right, keep on listening to find out how traveling doesn't have to be quite so stressful. So, your book is Traveling Different: Vacation Strategies for Parents of Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse, which I think is a great title because it covers a lot of area and it just talks about how we just need to do things a bit differently.
Yeah.
And so, you want to tell me a little bit about the book?
I would love to. It is what I consider the travel Bible for parents of children with invisible disabilities. I started writing it back in the early 2000s. And at that time, I needed this book and it didn't exist. I had been a travel writer for many years and I was surprised that it didn't exist. And so I started interviewing people like Dr. Tony Atwood, who's very big in ASD circles. I interviewed Dr. Ellen Littman, who's very big in ADHD world. And then I kind of hit a wall because I wasn't quite sure in the early 2000s who to go to next. So I put it aside. I started writing fiction. And in 2017, a group called IBCCES came out with a designation called the Certified Autism Travel Professional. And then I knew exactly how I could write this book because I could speak to those wonderful travel advisors who had dedicated a portion, if not their entire travel practice, to helping those with invisible disabilities, many of whom are special needs parents themselves. And they introduced me to other parents, and there was a lot more information on the internet in 2019 than there was in the early 2000s, a lot more groups that I could speak to on Facebook. And so it was a much easier book to write at that point. And then there was this, 2-year pandemic where I had nothing to do, and I'm not very good with nothing to do, so I wrote 4 books.
All right. It is definitely, there are unique challenges with traveling when you have neurodiverse children, or even if you yourself have neurodiverse issues. I know last winter I was traveling and I just couldn't sleep on the bed that they had there. And that was, really hard to be like, okay, I have to figure out some strategies, like how can I deal with the fact that I already have sleep issues and now I'm sleeping on this weird bed that I just cannot make feel comfortable.
Yeah. So is it that you were used to a harder mattress or a softer mattress or?
In that case, it was like this, one of the beds that you can like a really old sleep number thing that like filled with air. Like a big air pocket underneath me that made me it's like an old school water bed, but with air.
Yeah, so you would know next time what kind of mattress you have at home, and you could really ask the hotel ahead of time what their mattresses were, so you could make a decision on where you were going to stay based on that.
Yeah, because I already do a number of things for making sure that I'm doing better with sleep when I'm traveling, because I feel like that's got to be one of the top things that people have trouble dealing with.
Yeah, one of the things I recommend for parents, and these are not my recommendations, they come from all the people I interviewed, is that before you spend thousands on an expensive hotel stay, maybe stay at the home of a friend or relative for one night if the child has never been in a bed outside of their own. So you can see where the triggers are going to be. You can see if they need a specific type of bed, as you know, if it's too soft or too hard, as you found. Mm-hmm. They may need a fan to drown out the sound from the hallway. Mm-hmm. They may need the sheets and blankets from home that have the familiar texture and smell. And hopefully, if you're traveling by car or you're traveling by train, you could bring those along. They may also need the toiletries from home. They're used to a specific soap and maybe a washcloth, and those are all things to consider. By you know, seeing what those triggers are going to be, you can prepare yourself so when the expensive trip comes up, you're ready and you're not going to waste a lot of money on some non-refundable hotel stay that you can't use.
Yeah, I love the idea of doing like the test run to really, you know, pinpoint like, oh, you can be like, I can make this list of all these things that I didn't know beforehand, which I couldn't have even predicted.
Yeah, a lot of times you want to make that bedroom as much like home as you can. The nice thing is with hotels now, you can usually get a video or a photograph of the room, so you could preview that for the child. So there's less unpredictability, because all children like predictability and routine, and there's nothing familiar about travel. So our job is to make it as familiar as we can ahead of time. And videos are one way you can do that. Also, you can decide ahead of time if you're going to need the extra space of perhaps a vacation rental as opposed to a hotel room. I always recommend that people get hotel rooms with kitchens or kitchenettes so they can prepare meals when the child wants them. But if you have a house rental or a condo rental, kitchens included anyway.
Yeah, I imagine, just knowing with how my kids eat, that is going to be one of the things that we really have to look ahead at, being like, okay, well, how are we going to make sure that they have food when we're there? Because,
yeah,
you know. My daughter in particular is like very particular about the brand of food she eats. Mm-hmm. She's like, often for perspective, she's like, this one's just better. I'll eat the other stuff if I kind of have to, but maybe. But it's often like, this is just the best version, and so I need to have that one.
So yeah, if you're going by car or, you know, train, it's easier to bring those things with you. And obviously it's easier to bring packaged goods that don't need to be refrigerated. But a good idea, no matter where you're staying, whether it's a hotel with a kitchen or whether it's a vacation rental, is to call ahead of time, find out what grocery stores are close by, call ahead of time and find out if they carry whatever brand you need so you can buy it locally when you're there.
Prep time ahead is definitely something I can see being very valuable, because there's just so many things that we know that we're going to need, but, you know, we don't know if they're going to have there.
Yeah. I like to think of this book as a checklist. I divided it up into the beginning being how to get the child ready for travel, how you introduce the concept of travel, starting small, how to create a child-centric vacation. And then I break it up into how you get there, mm-hmm. And where you stay once you get there, and then what you do when you get there. Because you can't spend your entire time in the hotel room. So how you do touring and deal with theme parks or museums or all of that information. And I think that if you just read the sections that apply to you and whatever trip you're taking, that'll serve you well. There are certain things I repeat in every section, such as having your go-to bag with all the items that you need to keep the child occupied. But I figured people were just going to use it like a checklist. And there's so much to remember, then why not have a checklist?
Oh, yeah, checklists. I'm all about having a good checklist.
Yeah.
One question that was coming into my mind while I was getting ready for this is, I've often found, too, that while it is important to try and help my kid out, what's equally important is helping myself regulate. Because I can't help them regulate if I'm dysregulated myself. Mm-hmm. And so is that something that's covered in the book at all, or?
Not as much, by preparing ahead of time, and I do indicate all the things you should think of for preparing, you're kind of preparing yourself as well. And there's going to be a certain calmness knowing that you have a schedule, whether it's a visual schedule or a written schedule that you've worked out, mm-hmm. and you've thought ahead of all the ways things can fall apart, and you've got contingency plans. So then you're sort of walking in with a confidence that no matter what happens, you have a plan A and a plan B. I'll give you an example from the book there. I interviewed Nicole Thibault, who is with Magic Storybook Travel in Fairport, New York. I think I've got that right. And she's also a certified autism travel professional. And she went on a trip somewhere where they had to cross a rope bridge. And they didn't know if her son, who had autism, would be able to cross that bridge when the time came to it. So she spoke ahead with the tour guide. And what they did was they arranged for a golf cart to meet them. And if he was not going to be able to cross the bridge, he'd get in the golf cart and they would drive him to where everybody could meet later. And that's just a way of thinking, how do I prepare ahead? What am I going to encounter? And it's really a matter of sitting down from the moment you leave the house to the moment you come back and what's going to happen. Like if I had a child who didn't like crowds and didn't like strangers and didn't like, you know, unusual smells, then when I landed at an airport and I was going to get from the airport to the hotel, I probably wouldn't take the hotel jitney, even if it was free. I'd probably get an Uber or rent a car. So I had a little bit more control over my circumstances. So it's that kind of thinking. What are we doing every step of the way? And how can I lessen the number of triggers that we're going to encounter?
Yeah, that seems... Yeah, that definitely tracks with how I think about it with... Even if it's a more inconvenient way of doing things or might cost more,
yeah,
I need to do the way that works best for me.
Yeah, when you think about it, some of these things are going to cost more, but then if the entire if you don't do it and the entire trip is a disaster, then you've wasted all the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I'd rather see you go less often and have a trip that really works well and creates memories and bonds for the family than a trip that you're just going to be like, oh, I wish we hadn't done that. And believe me, all my trips early in my life with my children were like, oh, why did I do this? I did none of this, but this was a learning experience for me writing the book. I wish that I had known more. At my book launch in Manhattan, my son was in the audience, and at the end, when I said any questions, he raised his hand and said, do you think you would have liked to have done things differently? And I said, oh, yes. I wish I had even thought about building a trip around your special interests. It never occurred to me. But now I really talk a lot about creating the child-centric vacation. And if your child loves something like dinosaurs, then why aren't you going to a trip that incorporates a visit to a dinosaur museum? And at the back of the book, I list tons of special interests and museums that cater to them around the country.
Yeah, you want to have the best possible trip. It's not necessarily about where you go for yourself as an adult. It's the experience you're having. And having had times where my kids are not having a good time, I'm also not having a good time.
Right, exactly. You had the chance to travel before they came along, and chances are once they leave home, you'll have the chance to travel again. So this is your opportunity to travel with them and make it something special for them.
Yeah. Now, I'm also thinking, so we talked a little bit about like the sections. Where do you think people hit the biggest hiccups? Is it like the traveling there or the, you know, staying at the hotel or house or whatever, or eating? Where do you think people usually hit the biggest?
The biggest stumbling block is not going at all. And IBCCES, and I mentioned this earlier, so I'll tell you, it stands for the International Board of Credentialing and Continuing Education Standards. They conducted a study back in 2018 that showed that 87% of 1,000 special needs families would not travel. That's a huge amount. Yes. And 93% said they would if they knew where to go and what to do, and if they felt people understood their needs. Now, they redid that survey in 2022, and found that that 87% had dropped to 78%, which is great. I mean, it's still over three quarters, but it's a 9% improvement. And the 93% number went up to 94%. And I spoke to them and I said, what do you attribute that change to? And she said, the number of credentialing organizations that are announcing that various destinations, hotels, restaurants, attractions are now either certified autism centers or autism friendly. So that's a really good thing. And in my research, what I found is that parents were just nervous about their child having a sensory meltdown and what people would think about them as parents and their child. And that seems a really sad reason to not travel, because the world's out there waiting for you and you're as entitled to explore as anyone else. So if my book can make a change for the better, then that's something I'd be really proud of.
Yeah, that's really too bad that people worry about the perception of themselves. I mean, and that's also not great for the kids learning that about internalizing that same messaging that, like, oh, I'm a problem in society.
Yeah, or I can't explore, I can't see the world. It's a wonderful thing to learn about the world and get out there and grow. Now, to answer your real question is where are the other stumbling blocks? I will say that the airline section is the longest. Mm-hmm. And that's because I incorporated a lot of things like motion sickness and how to deal with that and how to deal with a meltdown while you're on the road. But the questions are really, how do we get to the airport and what happens? How do we check in with the least amount of triggers? My advice is always to use a certified autism travel professional, because they can call ahead and make arrangements for you and advise you. So, there's a group called the ARC has a program called Wings for Autism, and they have programs around the country which will allow you to have a dress rehearsal of the whole airport experience from arrival up until boarding. So that's a really wonderful program. There are individual airlines that also do that in various airports, so it's worth calling ahead and seeing who does that.
That's really neat.
Because then, yeah, and that will allow you to experience it when it's a less hot time, when you're less concerned because there's nothing at risk. You don't have to worry about getting on that plane. So that's worthwhile to do. We can keep an eye out for American Airlines. I know has programs around the country as well. Call the airline you're planning to travel with and ask them. But again, your certified autism travel professional can also advise you on that. And there's a program called TSA Cares, it varies depending on where you're traveling to and the airport you're leaving from. But at the very best, they will assign someone to you to shadow you through different areas of the airport and through security, which is usually what is going to create the most issue for your child going through, with everybody taking their shoes off and people being patted down and all this. So there are also many airports that have emotional service dogs available. I know that would make me a lot less nervous about flying if I knew I could play with a dog at the airport ahead of time. So all this sort of thing is included in that section, as well as determining if you should go on the plane early or late. And that all depends on your child and how, if your child's going to get really frustrated getting on board early and then waiting. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a better strategy to be one of the last ones on board and also maybe sit further forward so there are less people in front of you to distract you. Also a really good idea to role play the whole airline experience before you leave. So you learn not to kick the seat in front of you, and maybe you travel with a little fake remote control so you have some buttons to press that are not going to summon the flight attendant. Mm-hmm. So those are all ideas that I include in there.
Nice. Yeah. I know my kids are going to be going on their first flight since pre-pandemic, in, I think maybe a month now. And I'm like, yeah, we have to consider a lot of things because, 3 years ago, they were much younger. That was...
Yeah, they've forgotten.
Yeah.
A lot of it they've forgotten. And that's what the pandemic did to a lot of parents whose kids might have been sort of acclimated to flying. And now it's a new experience again.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. I mean, I've probably peruse the book after this with my wife and be like, okay, what are some of the things that we really have to watch out for? Because
yeah,
I've always found like when I try to think things through, there's always things I forget. So like the idea of having a guide seems really nice.
Great.
So you've already sold one book through the podcast.
Which is... I sold a book, yay! Actually, I've been very lucky that it's been a pretty big seller with libraries. And I always ask people to ask their local library to order it, because that way people who can't afford it can have access to it.
Something that, you know, it's a resource that people kind of need to have when like we have such a high number of families that aren't traveling because, the number of parents who are undiagnosed neurodivergent that have neurodivergent children, I feel is just through the roof.
Yeah. And I think it's an important statement to make that these tips can help whether the child is neurodivergent or neurotypical.
Yeah.
It can never be a mistake to prepare a child and make sure they know every aspect of what's going to happen and preview it with videos or with picture books that feature their favorite character and travel situations. Thank goodness for videos and pictures that we can get from the internet to see everything that's going to happen. How can that be bad? Though I think the worst thing you can do is say, oh, I'm going to spring the trip on my child. And like tomorrow we're going to Disneyland, and give them no time to sort of settle down with the idea and work it through. I think you're setting yourself up for disaster with that.
Yeah, that was my mother-in-law's suggestion. And my wife was just like, absolutely not. We are not doing that. That's good. Never going to work.
Good. Let the child have like a long time to get used to the idea of what the new routine is going to be. And what let them help pick the destination. Mm-hmm. You know, you should pick maybe two or three destinations and they've been all pre-vetted by you. So let the child have the final decision, because then they have a vested interest in the success of the trip. And if you haven't done that because you've already decided where you're going, you could let them make decisions of maybe one or two things to do each day.
Mm-hmm.
And create a visual schedule for them if they're not verbal, you know, if they're nonverbal or if it's difficult for them to remember something written, you know, create a visual schedule so they can refer to that. Another thing, when we were talking about hotels that I didn't mention, I had it in my mind to mention it and I forgot. One of the greatest ideas I got was from Tony Atwood, who's Dr. Tony Atwood, professor in Australia and Scotland. He says that if your child needs a place to decompress in the hotel room and you only have like a small hotel room, maybe put some bedding in the closet and let them have a place to have sort of be sequestered. I mean, I wouldn't close the door to the closet, but I mean, if they need their own private space, I always thought that was just an amazing idea.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just and since I have like two kids, I know like they need separate time alone. Like it's not, they need their own recharging and everything.
Yeah. And that's why it's always a good idea to build in decompression time into your schedule. So when I talk about the pacing of a trip, I mean, I know when I'm traveling, I used to try to get 5 or 6 things in during a day because, you know, I'm here for a limited time. I want to get the most out of my money. But the thing is that it works so much better if you do 1 or 2 things during the day and then spend the afternoon in front of the TV or in front of the pool, because then everybody has the time to decompress. And it's also a great idea wherever you're going to find out if they have a sensory room or a sensory area or a low sensory area. A lot of theme parks are creating sensory maps so you know exactly where to go to decompress. A lot of airports are creating sensory rooms. And again, your certified autism travel professional can guide you to which ones. I know that I did a piece or a couple of pieces in my blog, which is travelingdifferent.com, which backs up and supplements the book, where I listed what airports have sensory rooms. And so wherever you can find a place to decompress, take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's one of my faults is trying to jam too much stuff into a schedule. And that, because it's like, yeah, I want to do all these things and I'm only here for a couple days.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we were saying earlier, it's like, how are you going to get the best experience out of it? It doesn't necessarily mean doing more things.
Yeah. Pick the one or two that are most important to you and really enjoy those. You can always come back to the destination again if you love it. But I would say don't jam pack that schedule because you'll just be miserable.
Yeah. Because that was it. Once you hit that point where you're dysregulated, everything falls apart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's always funny. My kids are just kind of getting out of the age of where they like to nap. But I remember in past trips, having that nap time was so important because if we tried to skip it, it was a bad time.
Yeah. And you can certainly create a schedule for your trip that includes that time. Schedule it in to, keep as much of routine as you can.
Yeah. And now that we don't have nap, we just have quiet time where it's like they each get to do their own thing for a little bit without screens, just try and get yourself back to where you were when you woke up.
Yeah.
And I think having that kind of stuff planned into your trip is just so important to me, but so easy to forget with being like, I want to do stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's hard, but you have to just look at the big picture, and that is how you're going to feel when you get home. If it's something you're going to look back on and think, this was wonderful, and I want to repeat this, because you want to create a positive frame of reference so next time children are really excited about going away.
Yeah.
Or do you want to look back and think, yeah, I got all those things in, but I hated every minute of it.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to also look at things of being like, okay, this is how the general consensus of how you do things. Like, we go to the beach in the morning, but maybe you're a family that needs to go to the beach in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, because sometimes it's hard to get out the door in the morning.
Yeah. And for families who have never been to the beach before or have never had the kids go to the beach, buy some sand at a local craft store and lay out a tarp. And let your child walk in the sand so they get a sense of what it feels like to be in sand, so it won't be a new sensation for them when they get to the beach.
Yeah. Or, be like, hey, the water's going to be really cold.
Yeah, well, I'll let you do that in the bathtub.
Yeah. It's like, okay, kids, time for a cold bath.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd like that one either.
There's always just walking along the shore.
Yeah. I remember my daughter being at a beach and just like running into the water and being like, ooh, it was early spring. And it was just like, okay, let's get the towels and get her warmed up right away. She was not expecting that.
Yeah. Again, an important thing to preview ahead of time.
Yeah. Cause it's all the stuff you're not thinking about. It's going to happen. So I'm also do you have tips for when things start derailing? Is there ways to try and get back on track?
What I always say is the whole point of the book was to, it never gets to that point, but I know that's, impossibility. People will fall apart at some point. And you can always use that as a learning experience for next time. What I've heard parents say is they pull the child, say it's in the middle of an airport, they pull the child to a quiet place. They ignore all the people who might be staring at them or offer help, and maybe just a quiet place, and do whatever they do at home when they are encountering a sensory meltdown, whether it's snacks or just hugging or just keeping calm. That's really the best thing. I think it all comes down to your child. I'd be remiss to start giving advice when people know their own child better.
Yeah, it's very true. What works for, even with my two, I'm like, I know this will work for this one and that won't work for the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to use the strategies for that you use at home. I'm just trying to find strategies to use so it never gets to that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think mitigation is probably the best thing you can do because.
Yeah. You can't predict everything. I know there's one mom I interviewed in the book who said, she took her kid to Disney. And the child wanted to go on a roller coaster, but did not want go on a roller coaster that went upside down. And he was very clear about that. And the sister who was traveling with them said, oh, such and such doesn't go upside down. So they took that. I don't know why they didn't look at it ahead of time, but they took that. And of course, it went upside down. And now years later, the child never talks about how they had breakfast with the characters or any of the things they got to do. All he'll say is, I hated Disney. I hated this ride because I went upside down. So this was a pretty easy thing to check out ahead of time, either through a video or actually just calling and asking the park, what's the deal with this ride? Again, thinking ahead and preparing.
Yeah. And it's a good to look what the options are, and listening to your kids. When I was reading book with my son that had a roller coaster, I'm like, oh, do you want to go on a roller coaster? And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, I thought this would encourage you. This is, yeah. He's like, that sounds terrible. I'm like, well, I guess we'll see if you change your mind. We'll start off with something much smaller.
Yeah. And another family told me that they preview every ride in an attraction via video so they can rule out the ones they're not going to bother with. And it's easy enough to see on, you can go on a roller coaster virtually and see. That would terrify me. I hate roller coasters. But I would see pretty quickly that this was nothing I wanted a part of. And I think children might also. There's some things you can never predict. Like I had one dad who's took his kid to Disney World, and the kid wanted ice cream at 9 a.m. and they don't serve it until 10. And so the child went into a meltdown, and he would have never known to start calling and asking, when do you start serving ice cream? Because that's not one of the things you typically think about. And I'm sure the child doesn't get ice cream at 9 o'clock at home. So what he did was he called his travel agent, and the travel agent guided him to a quieter place to decompress in the park. So it was good that he had that resource to go to. But like I said, you're not going to be able to prepare for everything. Unfortunately, we're not given a guide to everything in the world. So you're going to learn by doing, and hopefully it'll be better next time.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of things people can start looking up, realize, because a lot of times people don't even consider that they can get support for these things. Like I've recently seen stuff about how Disney has passes for, even if you have ADHD, you can get a pass to that. You don't wait in the line. There's other places that you wait, and then they'll call you up when it's your turn.
Yeah, there are a lot of theme parks are doing this. A lot of theme parks, especially the ones that are been called certified autism centers by IBCCES. They have sensory maps, and they have training. Some of them have signage. So like at SeaWorld, you'll know what the smells are going to be like if you go through a certain point, and you can make the decision if feeding the seals is worth dealing with the smell.
Mm.
So these are all things that take into account that, people have sensitivities that have to be addressed. And this is a really good thing that's happening now for people to travel.
Yeah, and it's great that it's available, and it's just, it's be also great to have people just more aware of what's available, other than just being like, I have to research ahead of time.
Yeah. Now there's more and more places that are being certified, that are getting training. You have groups like IBCCES. You've got groups like Champion Autism Network that has. That works in South Carolina, Surfside Beach, Myrtle Beach, a growing number of places. They've also worked with a number of restaurants so that there are certain strategies to make sure that things go well at a restaurant. And the people there are all trained to be aware of, what the needs might be of someone on the spectrum or someone with invisible disabilities. There's a group called Culture City, another one called Sensory City. So there are even Autism Speaks is getting into the act, and they're going to be certifying destinations. They have not done any destinations yet. I think right now they're certifying some businesses, but they're working on it.
Awesome. Well, I think that covers, we've covered a lot of ground with this, and I think parents and just because I'm personally like, there's going to be things that are important for me to think about because I haven't flown on a plane in 3 years either. There's going to be things where I'm like, oh yeah, that could be better to make sure I have these things available. Because I'm not a kid anymore doesn't mean I don't have issues with things.
Oh, I agree. I phone all of the world and I still don't like to fly.
But yeah, so just to update people, the book is Traveling Different: Vacation Strategies for Parents of Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse. Is there anywhere else people should look to find you online?
Yeah, if people go to travelingdifferent.com, and that's traveling with one L, they'll find my blog. They'll find a list of places where they can order the book. It's basically available everywhere. And if they go to an indie bookstore, they can find it online on the online portion as opposed to on the shelves. Order it from your, to your, you know, ask your local library to order it. That's always good. But they'll find articles that supplement the book as well. They'll find out how to hire me if they want me to speak at a local special needs organization. You know, all the information is there. And if they find after reading the book, they can also email me. My social media contacts are there. If they find after reading the book that they have different strategies that I haven't mentioned, or they disagree with anything that I've written, then I welcome them to email me, because I'll probably publish their letter in my blog or interview them for an update of the book if we end up, you know, publishing an update. It's always good for me to know. For me, this is a big crowdsourcing experiment. You know, everybody has had a different experience, and I'd like to publish as many of those as I can.
Well, that sounds great. It sounds like a great resource for parents and everyone else. So thanks for coming on the show, and I thank you for writing the book. I think people will really enjoy it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for sticking with me all the way to the end. And thanks again for Dawn for coming on the show. I hope all of you got as much out of this episode as I did. If you'd like to check out Dawn's work, you can find more information at travelingdifferent.com, or you can just look for her book, Traveling Different: Vacation Strategies for Parents of the Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse, at all major book retailers. That's it. Thanks for listening. I'd love to hear what you thought of this episode. You can leave me a message over at hackingyouradhd.com/contact. You can also reach me on Twitter at hackingyouradhd, and I've also just launched a TikTok channel that you can find by searching for hackingyouradhd. If you'd like links or to read this episode's transcript, you can find those on the show notes page at hackingyouradhd.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, the best way is to share episodes with someone you think would get something out of it. Just click the share button on your podcast player and send your bestie the link with something like, "Hey, I loved this episode of Hacking Your ADHD. I'd bet you'd get a lot out of it too." Or you can support the show through my Patreon at hackingyouradhd.com/Patreon. Sign up for the $2, $5, $10, $25, or even $50 a month level and get some great perks like monthly bonus content or early access to upcoming episodes. That's hackingyouradhd.com/Patreon. And be sure to check out all the other podcasts on the ADHD Rewired Podcast Network. For interviews with fellow ADHDers and ADHD experts, check out Eric Tiver's show, ADHD Rewired. For those of you with kids, be sure to check out Brendan Mahan's show, ADHD Essentials. And even if you don't have kids, his show is still a great resource for ADHD management. If you're interested in exploring issues of race and diversity in ADHD, be sure to check out ADHD Diversified with MJ. I also do a live Q&A with all the hosts of the ADHD Rewired Podcast Network on the second Tuesday of the month at 10:30 a.m. Pacific. If you'd like to sign up, just go to adhdrewired.com/events. And now for your moment of dad. So I just found out there's a name for that condition where you can't sleep and all you do is eat. It's called insomnomnomnomia.